Welcome to part two of The Practice and Practicality of Mindfulness, episode 72 of Co-Creating Peace, a series about conscious communication and conflict transformation. I'm Kathleen Owegon. Last week in part one, I spoke with Andrew Safer, founder of Safer Mindfulness Incorporated. He walked us through a brief mindfulness exercise and shared some insights into the practice of mindfulness and additional ways that mindfulness can benefit our lives. Today, Andrew and I will pick up our conversation where we left off last week. At that point, we were talking about how to approach our anxiety from a mindful perspective. Andrew will tell us more about the practice of mindfulness, including how we can apply it when we are experiencing difficult emotions, in times of crisis, and even as a tool for suicide prevention. He will also talk about mindful listening and describe a mindful listening exercise for which he designed a worksheet that's on his website. But first, the quote for today. Today's quote is from page 5 of The Miracle of Mindfulness by Thich Nhat Hanh. If, while washing dishes, we think only of the cup of tea that awaits us, thus hurrying to get the dishes out of the way as if they were a nuisance, then we are not washing the dishes to wash the dishes. What's more, we are not alive during the time we are washing the dishes. In fact, we are completely incapable of realizing the miracle of life while standing at the sink. If we can't wash the dishes, the chances are we won't be able to drink our tea either. Before I continue my conversation with Andrew, I'm going to take you through a brief mindfulness exercise that I wrote for my conscious leadership class, which I call Opening the Present. The title of this exercise was inspired by a quote from Eleanor Roosevelt, which says, "Yesterday is history. Tomorrow is a mystery. Today is a gift." That's why we call it the present. This exercise is designed to bring our awareness to the moment we are in and to what we want to create in the coming moments. You will find it useful to bring mindfulness to your approach to a situation about which you are feeling tension, fear, or anxiety, such as a difficult conversation or a conflict. During this exercise, there will be periods of silence. There's nothing wrong with the recording, it's simply for the purpose of the exercise. Put down anything you're holding. Get comfortable in your seat with both feet on the floor. Focus your awareness on how you are feeling in this moment. How deeply are you breathing? Where is your attention? What are you feeling physically? What are you feeling emotionally? Now, close your eyes. Take 4 slow, deep breaths through your nose if you can. Keeping your eyes closed and your breathing slow and deep, notice your experience now. How does your breathing feel? Where is your attention? What are you feeling physically in this moment? What are you feeling emotionally? Now, bring your attention to your intention. What do you want to create in the next moments? For the next 4 breaths, focus on breathing in your intention and breathing out any fear or tension that you're carrying. holding your intention in your consciousness. When you're ready, slowly open your eyes.
I just wanted to talk about dealing with difficult emotions. You think about difficult emotions, could be anger, could be jealousy, be a feeling of betrayal. There's all sorts of difficult feelings and emotions, as we know. And the fact that we've labeled them difficult means we have a problem with these emotions. And so we have an aversive reaction to them, which is what we were talking about before. So that aversive reaction is that we are trying to get away from them, trying to avoid them. And that sets up a dynamic. We are in this type of relationship with this particular emotion. Every time it comes up, that's the relationship. So mindfulness is telling us that we can experience these things without getting enmeshed, without getting taken over by them. It's possible. And so that means that we don't have to be running away. We could actually stick around long enough to see what this is about. And I think a lot of the situation with difficult emotions is that we don't know them. We don't understand them because we've always tried to get away from them. So when we're dealing with something that we don't know and we don't understand, it's going to be difficult. So the solution is to get to know it, learn about it, understand it. That's going to take care of a significant area where the problem is.
That's really helpful information. And I do know that it is almost an instinctual response to either resist those kinds of emotions or run away from those kinds of emotions, or on the other end of the spectrum, dive deep into those emotions. And the idea of just being with them, noticing them, and getting to know them makes a lot more sense and seems like that would help us be able to then determine their origin, their cause, and how we might be able to find a way to release them. Would that be right?
Where we're running away from them, that's reactivity. And we're not going to have a chance to be making a choice, be making decisions. We're not going to be having a chance for our intelligence to come into play. But with what we're talking about, there's acceptance, there's being open to it. That creates some space, because the other way we have this reactivity. It's like being impulsive, and there's no chance really for intelligence. But what we're talking about now, there's space and there is an opportunity to see what's going on and see it with some perspective. So that makes a huge difference.
Yeah, I can see that. We've been talking about the internal, interior experience of mindfulness. I'd like to shift our conversation a little bit now into exhibiting mindfulness in our external world, in our relationships.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I've talked about several times in this podcast, and one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on to share more information, I speak a lot about being mindful about how we communicate and relate to others. I know that one of the ways that we can bring consciousness and mindfulness into our communication is through mindful listening. Can you describe what that is for the audience, please?
Yes, mindful listening is key to communication. Basically, when we're having a conversation and the other person's talking, we're going to hear the things that are of interest to us, and the other things we may or may not hear. And not only that, we're probably going to interject in the conversation. Our friend has something important to tell us. And as soon as they say something, we have something to say. So we're going to take the floor. So basically interrupt or hijack the communication. We're not trying to do that, but that's another form of reactivity where we hear something and then there's just an automatic response. So mindful listening, there's different exercises and different ways to develop this. I'm going to go over the one that I use in my groups. So let's say that you are with a colleague or a good friend, and you're going to be sitting in chairs facing each other. And one of you is going to be the talker, and the other one's going to be the listener. So the talker is going to talk about something that they know so well, they don't need any preparation. They just start talking about it. And the listener is going to be listening, but in a particular way. So the idea is to give the other person all of your attention, person who's talking. And if you have these impulses to be saying something, interrupting, so on, You're just going to sit there. You're not going to act on these impulses. You're going to sit there and you're going to be as attentive as you can be. So you could do it for, say, 5 minutes. That'll give that person time to talk about something. And it'll give you a lot of time to practice basically boycotting your reactivity. And when you're done, the listener can reflect on what was said, you know, not every detail, but just whatever comes to mind, and come up with one question. So they ask that question to the talker, and so they go back and forth with that. Now, this is not a practical approach in real life, not totally practical. The idea of never saying a word, you know, might not be practical, but we do it this way so that the listener gets a chance to really good opportunity to see what it's like to not be impulsive with their speech. So I suggest you give that a try. It's quite different from what we normally do. That's an example of mindful listening. You're not just caving in to your reactions. You're erring on the side of respect and receptivity.
And what you just described is what I do during the interviews. Because it's the same kind of thing, because I listen to you and there's so many things that are triggered in my mind as I'm listening. And it's important for me to completely hear you out and then harvest the gems and bring those gems back into my response. Not that there's not a lot of gems. You get what I'm saying. And also, that exercise that you were just describing is very similar to exercises that we do when I'm teaching people how to mediate. It's important for us as mediators to really completely listen to people and give them that opportunity to fully share their thoughts and then reflect back what we've heard and capture some of the information to then ask deeper questions about and help people be better able to understand each other and the source of their conflict and the impacts of their experiences. So it was so interesting as I was listening to you and seeing those parallels in what you're describing and what we do in conflict resolution. And truly, I think a lot of the reason that many conflicts happen is because people aren't listening mindfully. They're listening through their filters. They're listening to respond. They're listening to harvest ammunition for the argument. So many things other than just absorbing what the other person is trying to help them understand.
Yep.
This is such great stuff, Andrew. Thank you.
Thank you.
We've talked about some of the experiences that people have that are difficult and how mindfulness can help them with those experiences. There's times when people reach a state of crisis. Sometimes that state of crisis takes them into a place of wanting to end their journey on this earth. How could mindfulness help people who are having suicidal thoughts?
We had a group about a year ago, Canadian Mental Health Association and myself partnered. It was a fabulous group, people who were having suicidal thoughts. So I can say a few of the elements of our practice that I feel strongly, you know, factored into that. The first one is grounding. We did a bit of grounding, feet on the floor and our seat in chairs. It's easy to underestimate that one. It's so, you know, no big deal. But someone who's having suicidal thoughts, I hate to generalize, but I would say in general, they're out of balance. They're thrown off course. Probably something in their life circumstances that it's just way too much for them to handle. So they're going around in this condition of being off balance. The best way to start, I think, is by grounding themselves and reestablishing that connection with the floor, which is really the earth, our body and the earth. So that's one part of what we do. But, you know, in the practice we did together, you had some experience noticing your thoughts and bringing your attention back to the breath. And that is a central practice in mindfulness. So the more time they spend doing that practice, the better, because our habits of mind are so entrenched. There's some deep, like really deep ruts. They've created these deep ruts because we've done them for so long. So we need to be counteracting that with some sanity, I'll say. In this case, sanity is no matter what is going on in our mind, as soon as we recognize it, we have a place to go. So we're instilling that in ourselves and in our memory. So when a person is having these suicidal thoughts, I think they're less prone to being a victim of those thoughts. And there's a greater possibility that they can sort of step aside from them and connect to the real world. Those thoughts in our head are not the real world. They're just thoughts. And that's part of the practice, is we are not distinguishing between good and bad thoughts. We just want to be able to recognize them as thoughts. That's all we need, because the more we do the practice, the more we learn that thoughts are not facts. They're not reality. We shouldn't be basing everything on our thoughts. So these practices are, I think, really well suited to this population, because the more we are giving our attention to our thoughts, the more we are strengthening them, and then the more they can keep developing in whatever direction they're going. Attention is really big factor here. So we're going to shift our attention, which is not to say we're getting rid of the thoughts. If we try to get rid of the thoughts, then we're in that relationship of these are bad, I don't want them, you know, aversion. We want to stay away from that. So we want to recognize them and then bring our attention over here.
I'm seeing a pattern as I'm listening to you. You spoke in similar ways to how we deal with our thoughts when we're in a meditation, how we deal with our anxiety, and now when we're thinking about those suicidal thoughts. So I'm definitely seeing a pattern and a theme as I'm listening to you. And I remember years ago, there were a couple of films that came out that talked about how the brain actually becomes addicted to thought processes, that when we think the same thought over and over again, the brain in its brilliant elasticity will actually change to accommodate those brain chemicals that happen during those thought processes, and new synapses are created for the brain chemicals and the thought processes to go through, and that there's actually a physiological addiction that happens in the brain to thought processes that are repeated often enough. And as I'm listening to you talk about these ways of moving into a different way of thinking through mindfulness without resisting and without diving in my mind, it sounds as though you are describing a way of transcending the addiction to the suicidal thoughts. Am I on target here with what I'm understanding?
Yes, like we're saying, you know that you have an option. You have another option. So that puts you in a powerful position in relation to the thoughts. I think that would impact the addiction that you're talking about.
Yes, and the people that I've known who have had a lot of suicidal thoughts, it does seem to become an obsession for many, and for others, it seems as though that is the only option to escape whatever pain or trauma has gotten them to this state. And I think that one of the biggest, most powerful things that a person in that condition can remember, as you're pointing out, is that suicide is always an option. But once that option is exercised, there aren't any more. Mm-hmm. And that recognizing that every day we have another option. And I often think of it as sort of a one day at a time kind of thing, like with the 12-step program with alcoholism, is that just for today, I'll exercise a different option. I'll remember that I have other options. And one day at a time, is that sort of the same premise that you're thinking of here?
It is. I just realized there's one other point I'd like to make about the suicidal thoughts, which is that pretty much all of us have self-deprecating thoughts. It's criticism, self-criticism, and self-judgment. We all have some of that, but luckily it's manageable for most people. I don't know a lot of people. I think the people we're talking about here already got so much going on that is impossible to deal with. And that self-criticism and self-judgment is added to it. So the combination is just too much. So that way of looking at ourselves in a negative way over and over again is a significant piece of this picture. We have a practice known as loving kindness. You just think of this generating kindness first towards ourselves and towards others. I think that can be significant. And just generally with the non-judgmental piece, people are cultivating that or they're concentrating on that aspect of mindfulness. That's going to be significant in terms of starting to turn around this habit of self-hatred.
That's such an important point. We so often talk about being non-judgmental of others and being kind to others, forgetting how important it is to be non-judgmental of ourselves and to be kind to ourselves. And yeah. I think the more distressed we become about our lives, the easier it is to forget how important that is to be kind to ourselves and to be non-judgmental of ourselves. Because as you're saying, life is not always an easy experience. And sometimes we just feel overwhelmed by the difficulty or the belief that we don't have the ability to change what exists in our lives. And so to remember to not judge ourselves for where we are in this life, to be kind to ourselves, to forgive ourselves, to look for those other options, and to not resist what is, but to be mindful and embrace what is, and then determine how we want to move through it. Sounds like a beautiful way to live a life. Are there any other thoughts that you would like to share with our listeners while we have these moments together, Andrew?
Thank you, Kathleen. I'd like to mention, for anyone interested, I will be offering one-on-one mindfulness awareness meditation instruction and consultation. It'll be a 30-minute complimentary session for anyone. And the way to find out more about that, go to my homepage, which is www.safermindfulness.com, S-A-F-E-R, mindfulness, M-I-N-D-F-U-L-N-E-S-S.com. So I'll have some information about it there.
Well, that's very generous of you to offer that 30-minute complimentary mindfulness session. And I know we're going to have listeners who are going to want to harvest that opportunity. Thank you for all the wisdom that you've shared with us today, Andrew. It means a lot. I deeply appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen. It's been wonderful.
You can learn more about Andrew and his work at safermindfulness.com. That's safermindfulness.com. You can harvest the complimentary 30-minute mindfulness instruction session by going to safermindfulness.com/podcast-listeners. Andrew has also provided a worksheet on mindful listening, which you can find at safermindfulness.com/mindful-listening. If you're enjoying co-creating peace, there are so many ways to help this podcast stay strong and live long. Choose one, choose several, and know that I am deeply grateful for your support in any form. Subscribe to Co-Creating Peace on your favorite podcast provider. Subscriptions improve podcast rankings. Share Co-Creating Peace with people in your life. Share the show on your platforms, tell your friends about it, and give Co-Creating Peace a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. Become a patron of Co-Creating Peace by going to www.patreon.com/co-creating-peace. That's patreon.com/co-creating-peace with no hyphen in co-creating. Your sponsorship will go toward the production expenses of this podcast. Patrons pledging $10 or more per month will receive thank you gifts ranging from communication worksheets and workbooks to free communication coaching sessions with me and Co-Creating Peace t-shirts, coffee mugs, and tote bags. Contribute to the content of this podcast by sending me your requests for advice about conscious communication or conflict transformation. I will honor whatever level of confidentiality you want in my response. You can get a free 30-minute communication coaching session simply by coming on the show to talk about a communication challenge you're having. We can change the names of all involved, including you, to protect everyone's privacy. Trust me, any challenge you're having, others out there in the audience are also having. So you'll be helping them by working through your communication challenge with me. If you have ideas for episodes of this podcast or specific things you'd like to learn about conscious communication and conflict transformation, please send those to me too. Many episode topics and guests were suggested by listeners like you. The best way to reach me is to email me at owegon@bridgesofpeace.com. That's OWEEGON at bridgesofpeace.com. I love hearing from my listeners, and I want this show to have a direct and positive impact on your life. You'll be able to hear a new episode of Co-Creating Peace every weekend. This episode of Co-Creating Peace has been brought to you by the patrons who support Co-Creating Peace through Patreon.com and by Bridges of Peace, providing mediation, facilitation, training, and communication coaching services throughout the U.S. and around the world. Learn more about Bridges of Peace by visiting www.bridgesofpeace.com. Thank you for listening, and may you always find new ways to co-create peace in your life.